Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Are you a Yeovil Town fan? Do you want to help shape the future of Yeovil Town Football Club? The Glovers Trust exists to give Yeovil Town fans a democratic voice in the running of the club. Our aim is to strengthen links between the club and the local community it serves, and to engage with as many Yeovil supporters as possible. So, join the Trust today, and together we can build a stronger Yeovil Town Football Club. To find out more and to become a member, visit glovers-trust.co.uk and follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram.
And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
There's Lindegaard making for his back pedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris. He's found him by the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil.
Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Maddon, after just 6 minutes, gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott. Goal.
Dozer would have been ideal because he's got attributes to help the defence, and obviously he's got a long throw as well, a huge throw, which would be a big benefit to us.
Hello and welcome to the Glovers Cast. I'm Ian and I'm joined by David Coates this evening.
Good evening.
How are you doing? You okay?
I am doing very well, fully thawed out and dried out following a wet and blustery evening in the Hollywood Hills of North Wales.
Unfortunately, not joining us tonight is our ever-present BBC pundit, Mr. Ben Barrett. And for those of you who missed the commentary because you were there or you were doing something else, I can't think what else you would be doing other than listening to Yeovil Town versus Wrexham. Here's the clips of Sheridan Robbins and Ben's commentary for both the goals in the Hollywood Hills of Wrexham.
Caused some problems, headed away by Wrexham, but Charlie Wakefield's going to try and pick up the pieces. It's get Dale Gorman on the ball now for Yeovil. Back to Barnett, who's going to try and get another cross in, but it's over here, but that's going to fall to Staunton, and it's in! Staunton has given Yeovil Town the lead! A wonderful cross in from Jordan Barnett, and Yeovil Town have the lead! He was there to put it home, and after 64 minutes here at the racecourse, it's Yeovil who have taken the lead against Wrexham, who are yet to be beaten here. Wow, Ben Barrett.
Oh, my word. Josh Staunton had stayed forward from the free kick. He didn't track back. He didn't go there. The ball got recycled back to Jordan Barnett. And what a delivery it was. And the defence just looked right down the corridor of uncertainty. The goalkeeper doesn't know whether to come out. The defence don't know whether to go back. And Josh Staunton just makes a lovely connection. What a volley. He almost controls the ball in. He could have been so tempted just to welly it and put his laces through it, but he controls it. Rob Langton will be so gutted. He gets a hand on it. He pushes it onto the post. Now then.
Wow, wow, wow. Staunton's first touch. A cross comes in from Matt Worthington, and it's really good save from Leighton. And now Charlie Wakefield, and now Lewington scores! It's a second goal for Yeovil Town! Sonny Blue Lewington doubles the lead for the visitors! And wow, what a finish for his second goal in green and white! And after 82 minutes here at the racecourse, it's Wrexham 0, Yeovil Town 2!
Wow, wow, wow. What have we just seen? Wrexham didn't clear their lines. Max Hunt should have scored. Rob Leighton made an absolutely wonderful save, but they couldn't get it out. They then blocked one from Charlie Wakefield, and then Sonny Bluelow, Everton, right place, right time, smashed it, absolutely leathered it, nearly broke the net. Oh, my word. What are we seeing here, Sheridan Robbins? What a performance from this young, threadbare, bare bones, down to 14 players and a college youth on the bench. What are we seeing from this lot?
Well, Dave, you were there. We've heard Ben's thoughts at the exact moment that the ball went in the back of the net on both occasions. How are you feeling? How are you feeling? You know, you've had two nights sleep after this now. What are your thoughts on what you saw in Wrexham?
I didn't hear Ben's screams from the other side of the pitch. I have to say, I could clock him from where I was stood in the away end there, but I didn't hear those cries of exultation that we heard just then. But I think he had a slightly better view of it than I did, because the strike by Josh Staunton for that first goal, when I watch it again on the replay, looked an awful lot better than it did in real time from where we were stood. I mean, you couldn't really judge from where we were how far out he was, but he was actually a long way out, wasn't he? And then, you know, placed that ball perfectly in there. So yeah, but...
It's an unreal finish.
It was a great finish, wasn't it?
Unbelievable.
For a centre-half / midfield player, yeah.
Maybe we found the answer for our problems up front.
There you go. Just give the ball to Josh and he will score. Yeah. But you can hear, I don't know if you can hear, there's almost like a delay between the ball hitting the net and there being a cheer in the away end. And that probably tells you how far away that goal is from. I'm starting to think this is a thing, because I'm sure I said this about Yate as well. And yeah. It's, there's nothing particularly wrong with my eyesight, but these goals seem to be getting a lot further away for me. So maybe my, you know, just my eyesight degenerating in the same way that my hearing is. But it was pretty special. I mean, I've listened to a few Wrexham fans' analysis of it. I've listened to, well, I've read quite a few Wrexham fans' analysis of it as well. And if you believe what they said, it's, you know, basically the referee that did everything. I mean, they played us off the park for 90 minutes, created umpteen chances. Paul Mullen was like, you know, a young R9 Ronaldo, and their defence was as solid as a rock. Well, I don't know what they must be smoking something pretty good in Wrexham, because they spent all night thinking about how they're going to win the league. And I do wonder whether Chesterfield fans or Boreham Wood fans would probably got more right to be singing about that. But yeah, they're a funny bunch in North Wales. There was a lot more of them than there was last time I went there. Anyway, when I went there, when Reece Murphy scored a hat-trick and we drew 3-3 a couple of seasons ago, the pub we were in before the game was a lot quieter. I can't think what must be attracting people there, though. Yeah, I'm sure it's the love of a good wet and windy night in North Wales.
When you say you've read analysis, do you mean stroppy tweets?
Well, I read some stroppy tweets, but yeah. I did listen to a few. Podcasts, I guess you could call them. There was one of a Wrexham fan who was basically, he'd obviously written some notes, and he was on YouTube, and he was obviously just reading through his notes as he was going. His camera kept falling over all the time as well. But yeah, he basically said that it was the referee should never have sent off McAlinden, and that was what changed the game. And there was never, you know, we never had a chance before then, and we barely even had a prayer after it, but somehow we won 2-0. So I don't know. I mean, I won't do what I've just spent the last 5 minutes complaining about. And I will say that Wrexham as a team, I mean, you can tell they've got some real quality in the side. Mullen, I mean, I don't He had one ruled out for offside. I think he had the ball in the net from one offside. When he got the ball, you could tell he was a good player. You know, he had a lot of quality about him. I think it was Davis in the middle of the park. I remember scoring a wonder free kick or a great goal against us when he beat us 3-0 at their place last season. But yeah, they've got some very good players. I would say Ben Tozer isn't one of those players, although he can throw the ball a very long way. So, yeah. Paul from the Green and White summed up Ben Tozer very well when he said, I've seen milk turn quicker than Ben Tozer. So, yeah, definitely not a centre defender.
It's an odd one, Tozer, isn't it? Because I think he sort of hit form for us like towards the end of Darren Way's. It must have been Darren Way's. Was it the 6 months he was in charge? Yeah, he was. Sturrock signed him. Mm-hmm. But he sort of hit form and then he decided to up sticks and go.
Yeah.
And he was felt like a bit of a loss at the time. But yeah, it was interesting hearing him just wiping the ball down for.
Yeah, they've invested some of those millions in some big green towels that they give every ball boy to be. So yeah, he had a little bit of banter with some fans telling him, you know, that he was only there for the money. That might have been me. And people telling him that he was only there to throw the ball a really long way. And to be fair, for long throws, the man has got a hell of a long throw. They were like bombs going into that box. But unfortunately, none of his teammates seem to particularly be able to do anything with him. Because I can remember the sort of the end of the second half, Grant Smith like turning one over the bar. But for this one-sided match that apparently I sat and watched, I can't remember them having too many, you know, I can't remember Grant Smith pulling off a great save, which he often does. But we got two, they got nil. That's all that counts, isn't it?
On the red card, you've already planted the seed that you were quite far away from that end of the pitch.
Yeah, I've done the full Wenger there, haven't I?
could you see it was red? I mean, I've looking back at the highlights, it looks pretty. I don't know. I think the way he sort of goes around with one arm and then the other arm sort of follows through and whacks Moss, it looks like there's a little bit of intent there for something, I think.
I'll be honest, it was a long way from us. I didn't even realise he'd been sent off for a long time until he started walking off. And even then, I wasn't 100% sure he'd be sent off because I didn't see the red card and I was not alone there. There were other people who didn't see the red card. And
Adam, it sounded like the commentator on the highlights didn't.
Really? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, on the highlights.
And on the high, the Wrexham commentator.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he talked about it. He said he called it a nasty challenge to start with, I think. And then on the replay, well, after he had been sent off, he called it a hard elbow by their player. So, and that's one of their own, you know, their own fans. But yeah, you could tell by the reaction of a couple of our players that it was a bad challenge. And when Moss stayed down as long as he did, you got the impression that it was pretty bad, you know. From one angle, I've seen it, and I'd say, yeah, there's definitely a straight. From another angle, you don't see as much of the player going into Moss, McAlinden, and then you could say, well, it seems like a bit of a soft red. I mean, Wrexham fans are going to say it's not. I'm going to say it is. So, not all Wrexham fans are going to say it's not, are they? Because some of them have obviously said that it is. But I mean... you've seen him given, haven't you?
Yeah. I think it's an orange card.
An orange card, yeah.
Some referees give it as a yellow, some give it as a red. And, you know, for once, it was sort of in our favour, a decision like that. You know, when you look at what happened against Dover.
I was going to say, before.
I mean, that, to me, when you watch the highlights of that, that looks a lot worse than what McAlinden did, but
absolutely.
And shortly after that, I mean, Ben was certain it should have been a red card after.
Was it something on Yusuf? Was it a foul on Yusuf?
Yeah, I think it was after the ball had gone dead, someone left a challenge in on him, and he got a yellow for it, but Ben thought that was them down to nine on the commentary.
I mean, they lost their edge definitely for a while. the manager certainly lost his head. He was going crazy on the touchline, Phil Parkinson. But yeah, again, from where we were, it was difficult to judge anything. I mean, Ben was raised high up, obviously, you know, with a padded seat and all these kind of things. I mean, I'm suspecting that's where he is tonight. You know, he's probably off sealing a big money move somewhere, I'd have thought, with January coming up. But yeah, so yeah, he would have got a much better view of it than me. But there was definitely a few feisty ones going in there, but weren't great conditions either. So, you know, it was very wet and windy. So, you know, tackles that might have, you know, the player might have held up a bit more on the surface as well. They didn't on this occasion, I don't think. But yeah, so I think if they'd have, you know, they'd have emptied the stadium, they'd have put the stadium on fire, I'd have thought, if they had gone down to 9 men. They were moaning enough about going down to 10. So,
and the big thing, I suppose, is the fact that we've played against a team with 10 men and we've managed to
win a game,
hold the ball, score 2 goals. Like, was it, you know, the team setup was a bit of, when we first saw the team news, we all, you know, Ben wrote it in as a 3-5-2, didn't he, on our group chat, and then it turned out that Williams was left back, and it was as you know, 4-3-3, and those partnerships remained. Like, did we do anything different when they had 10 men, or did we just, you know, carry on playing?
I think we carried on playing as we were. I think they carried on playing as they were as well. And I mean, their biggest threat, I think, was from those toes along throws. And you could see on a couple of occasions that there was one where they were trying to win a throw more than they were trying to win a corner. I think, was it Rory Delap, wasn't it? I can't remember which goalkeeper it was, but I remember kicking a ball out for a corner against Stoke when Delap was there, rather than putting it out for a throw because he was worried about it. And it was a similar kind of thing where Wrexham were trying to put the ball out for a throw because they knew that. And I guess if that's your, you know, your main threat, doesn't really matter if you've got 10 or 11, does it? Because you know, just chuck the ball into the box and hope someone gets it. But yeah, I don't think either side particularly changed the way they were playing. And to be fair to Wrexham, they, you know, did have chances, and they didn't look particularly like they were down to 10 men in a very similar way that Dagenham didn't look like they were down to 10 men when they were down to 10 men when we played them at their place. So we had 15. There was 4 on the bench, wasn't there? So we had 15 players. One was Max Evans, goalkeeper, who was, you know, and one was Ollie Aist, who's 17 years old. So yeah, I expected nothing against that. I'd have been quite happy if we'd have, you know, not got a spanking, especially when you look at the strength and depth they've got. They could bring Jake Hyde, who I think was top scorer for Halifax, off the bench to play for him. I know he's been injured recently and he probably would have started if he hadn't been, but you know, to bring that, to have that kind of quality, then we shouldn't have been anywhere near that game, but we were. And I will say, I know Sheridan and Ben both gave Dan Moss plaudits for his performance, quite rightly, but my man of the match was Morgan Williams, for a player that hasn't, I think, started 1-2 games this season. I think he won absolutely everything, and great in the tackles, great, you know, if he could feel very unlucky not to stay in the team against Stevenage, even if Wilco is back, about fit. Because, yeah, he was excellent. He was absolutely brilliant, Morgan Williams, I thought.
So the goal goes in. Josh Staunton puts us 1-0 up.
Yeah.
How are you feeling at that point?
Bloody hell. What's going? Yeah, you just didn't, honestly, just didn't know what was going on. Like I say, 40 players, no Knowles, no Wilco. I wasn't expecting anything from us. They're obviously down to 10 men. You thought, we might just do this, you know, we might just hang on. But to be fair, I don't think we did hang on. I think we carried on doing what we did. And then, you know, the opportunity presents itself with a second goal as well, which
What happens then? The second goal goes in. How are you feeling then? I mean, that caught me totally, you know.
I was going to say, the second goal goes in, and the most beautiful sight of looking at the home end and just seeing it empty. Empty. And hearing all these Wrexham fans who've been shouting at the Oval 103 supporters about what terrible support we had. And there they all go. So, I do admit that a lot of the celebrations were spent with me singing cheerio at the home fans as they all walked out. So, yeah, it was a beautiful sight, but there we go.
And what a moment for Sonny as well.
Yeah. And again, couldn't see the quality of the finish as well as you could, but he took that really well, didn't he? For, like I say, in the conditions that they were, because there were a couple of times, and I think you saw it on the highlights, where we tried to place a ball in the top corner and it sort of caught in the wind. The wind wasn't really coming one way or another. It was just sort of like swirling about. So there were a few occasions where, you know, if he'd have just lashed at that, it could have gone high, wide and handsome. But he didn't. He controlled it really well. But I did think to myself, I thought that the first chance was Charlie Wakefield, but it wasn't. It was Max Hunt. And I was thinking, how has he missed that? You know, Charlie Wakefield. I can forgive Max Hunt for missing that. But then I noticed almost like seconds later, Wakefield had the second shot, didn't he?
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, you know, there were a couple of players in his way there. So you could forgive him for that. But it broke nicely to Sonny. And yeah, he did put it. I mean, we've said all along, haven't we? He's obviously got class. He's obviously a very classy player, and he's got that. He's got that ability. But nice to see him score. And I remember seeing the goal he scored up at Yate as well. Lesser opposition, obviously, but that was a beautiful, you know, just bent it into the top corner. So yeah, I was pleased with him. And again, he never stopped running, Sonny. He was relentless, even in horrible conditions against, you know, for. I was on the Wrexham podcast before the game and I said that we have a bit of shithousery about us. Sorry for pressing the button. But and I think, I don't know if anybody saw the highlights, but Mr. Jordan Barnett, again, did his thing. You watched the second goal with Sonny and he turns to the Wrexham fans behind and he's giving it this. And then you see this woman in a coat with a Wrexham shirt on underneath it come screaming at him like this, and then he just gives her even more. The man's a legend, I have to say.
And yeah, back in midfield as well.
Yeah. And you know, we all know that he can do it there, but yeah, but you've got to give credit to the players. You've got to give credit to Darren Sahl, Terry Skivett and everyone, because they're literally working miracles with what they've got there.
Yeah, and that's what I sort of, you know, after the Weymouth game at home.
Yeah.
You know, I did my five conclusions and hastily, I don't know, you know, we both sort of thought the writing's on the wall. Like, not that we thought a decision would actually be made as such, but I think we both thought that the manager's time was coming up, but but major Homer Simpson backtracking into a hedge here. What a month.
Yeah.
In November. He's absolutely phenomenal. And I think, yeah, absolute credit to him and the players. I don't think when the final whistle went against Weymouth, I did not think that we'd go on this run. And
against those teams as well.
Yeah,
you saw that month of November and you thought we're going to be lucky to come away with too much out of that. And it is just bizarre. If you'd have told me that we'd have dropped points against Dover and not Bromley, Dagenham and Wrexham away, I'd have thought you were smoking whatever they were smoking in Wrexham. But yeah, crazy, you know. I think, it was last season, wasn't it, where he got battered at Torquay on Boxing Day. Yeah. And I remember, this was long before I got invited onto here, but Ben and I ended up on Radio Somerset. Obviously, you know, it's far better punditry on there. But before the Aldershot game, on the game after Torquay, and I remember saying at the time that I thought Darren Sahl had two games left to save his job. And that was Aldershot in that game, and it was Torquay on New Year's Day or whatever it was. They won 3-0 against Aldershot on the 28th, and then they beat us at Torquay at home. So yeah, and to be fair, at that point I think he did have two games to save his job. And like you say, after the Weymouth game, I think if they hadn't got through that FA Cup tie, it would have been, you know, well, let's assume that we've got someone who can make a decision at the top of the club. There would have been a lot of pressure on for Mr. X, whoever it is, to make a decision.
Yeah.
From yeah. Dublin.
So, Darren, I know you don't listen, but
yeah.
I'm sorry.
But if you do, we're sorry.
We're both sorry. yeah. Keep doing what you're doing because it is unbelievable. Yeah.
It was nice to see, actually. I just that after the Dover game, Josh Staunton came on Twitter and he said something about that. You know, he made a mistake to give away that first goal, and you know, if he was taking the credit, then he had to take the punishment as well. And he was sorry, and we'd sort it out and all of that. And then to respond like that with that goal, well, Josh Staunton, take my hat off to you.
I'm not sure how Josh Staunton can take the blame for
no. But the fact that he did, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
No,
it's
know,
like, yeah, yeah.
yeah.
And I replied on Twitter saying, with a horrible, cheesy cliche of not all captains wear armbands, but but not all, what's it?
Only the ones who can't swim.
Exactly. Bloody hell. Barrett really is here, isn't he? Terrible puns.
Right, so. We're playing Stevenage in the FA Cup. It's FA Cup second round time. And I have spoken to Stevenage fan from the Stevenage FC podcast, Matt. So have a listen to that. And then me and Dave will be back to have a little bit of a chinwag about that and take your questions. Okay, so ahead of our big FA Cup second round match against Stevenage on Saturday, I'm very happy to welcome Matt Farley from the Stevenage FC podcast, The Glovers Cast. Hi, Matt, how are you doing?
Hi, buddy. Yeah, I'm really good. Thanks for having me on. It's always quite nice to come and do this on other sides' podcasts. I've done it so many times over the last year. So, yeah, to come on and talk about my team, Stevenage, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Tell us, are you looking forward to the game?
Definitely. Yeah. I'm such a positive Stevenage fan. I always look forward to any of the games. But FA Cup, I can imagine it's the same for Yeovil. But, you know, it's so big for our club at Stevenage. You know, with the financials after COVID and all the memories we've had as a club at Stevenage in the FA Cup, it's important. So, no, we're looking forward to it on Saturday.
Yeah, I think we're sort of a little bit in the same boat. We got a lot of things going on off the pitch, and it seems like every time we get through a round, it's getting more and more important for like the future of the club. So yeah, and being like in the position of being non-league again and coming up against a league club in the FA Cup, it's sort of got a little bit of an edge to it as well.
Yeah, do you know what? I was saying this to someone yesterday. It's really weird for us because normally we're on the other side of the wall almost. We've always come up, you know, the same as Yeovil, through the non-league ranks, and we're so used to being a non-league club playing a League Two side, looking at it and thinking, oh wow, what a great time of playing a league side, and then it's just really weird that we're kind of on the other shoe almost. It's a little bit strange Saturday.
Yeah, plus we're on the telly as well, so it's got that added bit of excitement to it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Talk to me about your season. Obviously, you've recently changed manager, Alex Revel. I think he was quite a popular player, wasn't he, for you, and took over. So what happened there? What's the situation?
Wow. Well, yeah, it's honestly been a crazy season being a Stevenage fan. It feels like, for the past 3 years now, we've just had these ridiculous seasons. And yeah, this season's probably one of the most out there. But we started the season with Alex Revel, who was made manager before COVID and got the job full time and had last season and come into this season. And it's been a real strange one for us this season at Stevenage, because we ended last season really well. We went on a run of games. I don't think we conceded a goal for about 16 games. It was one of the best runs I've seen, actually, as a Borough fan. And we came into this season recruiting what seemed a playoff contending team. A lot of players, Jake Taylor, who was captain at Exeter, Chris Lines, you know, some excellent players. And Yeah, we all assumed we'd be up there competing, and it's kind of gone the opposite way. We started well, and ever since our 4-1 loss at Bradford, the team have really struggled to pick up points. The home form's been really good. I think we're about 12th in the home form stats, but our away form in the league has just been absolutely shocking. And we've got one win and two draws and about six or seven losses away from home in the league. So with that, and some poor performances. Yeah, Alex Revelle had to go a few weeks ago. It was a bit of a sad one. I knew Revs personally. I had a lot of private conversations with Alex. He's a lovely guy. He was a great player for the club, and I'm sure he'll go on to do really, really well elsewhere. But yeah, unfortunately, his time was probably up along with Dean Wilkins. But yeah, so for us the last couple of weeks, it's kind of been, you know, who's going to take over? There's been so many names thrown into the hat. Steve Evans has won. We're a bit like, oh wow, this is getting exciting. And then about 2 days before it announced, Paul Tisdale became favourite in the bookies, and yeah, we got him, and we're really happy with it. He's probably the first time we've had a really experienced manager at Stevenage. So yeah, we're looking forward to it. I think it's his first proper game on Saturday. He was in charge last night in Football League Trophy, but he wasn't on the touchline. So yeah, I think for us at Stevenage, we're hoping that we can turn our form around under Paul, and yeah, we've got a good enough team to do it. So yeah, roller coaster of a season for us at Stevenage, but yeah, we're seeming to kind of turn things around, which is lovely.
Yeah, Paul Tisdale was at Hewish Park on Saturday doing his homework.
Oh, didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, I think he was spotted in the in the director's box. Watching the game, so he has done a bit of work. Obviously, he's quite familiar with Yeovil, having played for us a long time ago. Now, we on the podcast, we've dubbed this game El Salico. Obviously, sharing Darren Saar as managers, yeah. But I mean, we've also got Luke Wilkinson, Del Gorman.
Yeah.
Darren Saar likes to bring in players that he seems to have used a lot previously. Talk to me about your history with Darren Saar, and you know, how has he thought about it, Stevenage?
Yeah, well, I think the one thing that not a lot of people actually know is he actually supports Stevenage. He's actually a fan of the club. I used to stand, and this was years before he was manager at our club. He used to stand on the East Terrace. He actually supports Borough, so I can imagine it's a bit of a weird one for him, because it's a bit of a sticky situation to be in. But yeah, Darren, to be fair, he was a big name at our club. He came up through the academy, and he was an academy coach, and then previous management left, and he was given the job temporary, and a bit like we did with Alex Revelle, he then became manager. And yeah, Sarli, do you know what? He had about a year and a half, 2 years where he did really well. And he built this really good team. Other players that have played for you, Charlie Lee, and players like that were playing for us at the time. And we built up a really good team. And it looked like we were going to actually get promoted one season. And we had a really poor ending, missed out on the playoffs, went into the next season. And that's where I think his lack of experience at the time managing a Football League side cost him, because he got rid of some key players like Charlie Lee. And at the time, he actually used players like Dale Gorman, who at the time were probably inexperienced for Football League level, if I'm being completely honest. And unfortunately, Sarli went March 2018, I think it was. But no, I like Sarli. I think he's a really good guy. He loves the club. And yeah, I think it's been quite nice to see that he's done really well in management, because after he left, we didn't know where he was going to go. So it's really nice to see that he's kind of found a bit of a home at Yeovil. But yeah, other players. Luke, I've actually been talking to Luke Wilkinson today, actually.
Oh, have you?
No, honestly, no. But Luke was great for us. We were gutted when we lost Luke, and when Luke left. I always remember playing Morecambe away in League Two, and we knew that Luke was, it was probably his last season at the club. And yeah, he scored in the 95th minute. And I'll always remember it was one of the great Borough away games all the way up north. And yeah, we'll always remember it with Luke scoring that goal. So, yeah, we were gutted that he left. And, yeah, now I've been speaking to him this week, kind of saying to him, you know, don't play too well against us on Saturday. So, yeah, it'll be really good to see those guys again. I haven't seen them since they played for Borough. So, yeah, it'll be good.
Yeah, Luke is proving to be a really like key player for us, and we had a great start to the season, and he picked up an injury against Chesterfield, and then our form totally dropped off, and then he's come back in, and you know, we went unbeaten in November, played 8 without losing, and obviously last night, as we're recording last night, we beat Wrexham away. He didn't play that game, he was unwell overnight, so he's fingers crossed he'll be all right for Saturday, but he's a big player for us, and yeah, when he's on the pitch we seem to do a lot better than we do without him, so yeah.
He's a big player, Luke.
Yeah, definitely. Off the pitch, I like to go into that sort of stuff. What's the situation like at Stevenage? Obviously towards the bottom of the table at the moment. Are fans sort of happy with their lot with the owners, or do they want change? What's the situation?
Yeah, it's in my honest opinion, and I'm pretty sure a lot of other people would agree with me, for us at Stevenage, yeah, we're doing very well off the pitch, actually, as a club. The one thing that, obviously, over the last few seasons where we haven't had the greatest of seasons, the one thing that has been a really big positive is actually the off-field things that are going on at our club at Stevenage. We've got so much. We've had some great sponsors the last couple of years. We had Burger King for the last couple of years, and then we picked up an Amazon Prime Gaming sponsor. So the kind of sponsorship at the club's been great. We're kind of a bit more out in the American market and things like that. And the finances are great off the pitch. The club's doing some great work in the community. During COVID, we had a what would I call it? Almost like a community care line, helping the kind of vulnerable and elderly. And off the club, we've been doing some big things. We've built a new stand. We've got that at the club now, and the club looks like a proper football league club, unlike it did years ago. If anything, I think people have been frustrated that the football club that we've got at Stevenage has been doing brilliantly off the pitch, but not so well on the pitch. So things have been going great for us. Phil Wallace, who's our chairman, he deals with all the kind of off-field scenarios at the club. And I think Phil's done a brilliant job at the club. Again, he's kind of moulded the club into a well-established football league club now. And he's got some really good initiatives going along with it. So I think things have been positive. Again, it is at our club is just doing well on the pitch, which is probably about the right time to start making that happen, really.
Yeah, and I think, you know, an appointment like Paul Tisdale with his record, you know, hopefully it might be a little bit too soon for him come the weekend, but after that, you might go on a nice run.
And
are you coming down? You're coming down on Saturday?
Coming down. Again, I think I said to you before, I don't miss a game. I go to all the Stevenage games, even the little ones. I'm always there. So, yeah, coming down. I think we've fully booked 4 or 5 coaches. So we've got a good few hundred coming down on the coach. We're doing this thing at the club where everyone who gets a ticket gets free coach travel. So, yeah, no, there's a few of us coming down. I'm hoping we bring a lot more along with the coach as well, and get a good kind of backing for our boys down there. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it Saturday.
Yeah, it should be a good game. I think we're all, I don't want to say it too loudly, but I think we're all quietly optimistic given our form, although the thing is, at home you never know what Yeovil Town are going to turn up, so fingers crossed we'll bring some of our away performances to the home situation and give you a good game. Enjoy it should be fun.
Yeah really looking forward to it. It's really weird for us because it's like, you know, it's such a big competition for us in the FA Cup, but we're just crying out for an away win. So it's like, for us, it's a really weird scenario where, you know, the FA Cup's massive for us. It'd be great to get into the third round, but just to kind of get the team an away win competitively, hopefully kind of pushes us. We've got 2 big league games next week at home that we need to win. So we're kind of praying we get a good result that can kind of go into the league and help us out there. We've just started taking over. So yeah, it should be a good game. I think it'll be very competitive, actually.
Yeah, I think so too. Best of luck. And
you too.
Enjoy your afternoon, and thanks for joining us on the Glovers Cast.
No worries. Thanks ever so much for having me.
So that was Matt, probably up there with one of the most positive pollies we've ever spoken to on the Glovers Cast.
We've had a few.
Unbelievable. Dave, are you excited for the FA Cup match?
I'm not sure I can get myself too excited for Stevenage at home, but No, I can't, I'm afraid. No. Not as excited as Matt, anyway. I don't think anyone's as excited as him. And it's interesting to see the Stevenage commentary. This is a really big game for them. And maybe it's because they've had a bit of a rubbish season, obviously with the manager leaving, and they've got a new manager in now, as we heard, Paul Tisdale. So, yeah, it sounds like it's good for... And I suppose a third round tie is something we should be, should really be looking forward to. So I'm glad it's on the TV, because then it gives me an opportunity to watch it without having to travel 5 hours each way to get there. Does that sound excited? That's about as excited.
I'll take it. I mean, they're bringing five odd coaches down.
Are they?
Yeah, five full coaches.
Three coaches.
Yeah. So, that's, there might be a bit of an edge to the game. There might be a bit of an atmosphere.
But they don't call it El Salico, no.
No. But I think,
Tisdaleco. Oh, Tisico.
Maybe this is me, a little bit excited because we've won a lot of games in a row, but...
Yeah, but now you're going to go.
Yeah, I know.
Ruin it all.
I've got my ticket. I'm there.
Sorry, everyone.
Yeah, apologies in advance. But the thought, the thought of us being on this run, them not being on much of a run, and the prospect of a third round, cup tie. Like, I think when you look at our position off the pitch, if we get a decent draw, if we get through and get a decent draw, it we're sort of, are we in like 1990s territory? A little bit with Arsenal coming to town,
Don't see anybody shaking buckets at the moment, but you'd think if we don't get crowds of, if we're only getting crowds of 2,000, we can't be far away from it, can we? As I say, not to go off on one about it, but there doesn't seem to be a huge amount of investment, because I don't think the people that own the club have a huge amount to invest or the desire to invest it. So once the cup money and the TV money and the the loans have all run out, the money's got to come from somewhere, isn't it? And we're probably not a million miles away from shaking buckets, I don't think.
No, so it's I think there's that added edge to this tie that makes, for me, it makes it feel a bit more important than any old game, and is also that, that nostalgia of us being non-league. And although it's a bit painful that now Stevenage are, above us when traditionally they've always been below us.
Yeah.
It's still a league club, and it's, on paper, it's a possible giant killing opportunity, isn't it? Us beating a team from the league above. So I don't know. I think those who are going can be a little bit excited, and I think
if you're going, don't let my imagininess take you down. Go there and be excited. Make a racket.
Make a racket. There we go. You've got permission from Coates to make a racket.
Yeah, you can't sing "You're Only Here for the Money," because I don't think they've got that much money at Stevenage. Do your thing.
Right, should we do some questions?
Let's do some questions.
The first one here is from USU. Can we still hate Stevenage as much now they have the most dapper man and a decent bloke in as football manager?
Yeah, well, I would say that I don't think too many Yeovil Town fans hate Stevenage quite as much as Hugh does. and I think Hugh's hatred of them goes back quite a long way to the sort of, what would that be like, early 90s, mid 90s, or maybe a bit later than that. He refers to them as the DCBs, the dirty, cheating people whose parents gave birth out of wedlock. There's a story about how they tried to bribe Torquay or something like that. They threatened to sell their star striker, because this was all at the point in time where teams couldn't go up if their ground wasn't good enough. Now, Torquay were threatened to go down from the conference. Stevenage could go up, but Stevenage couldn't go up, but Woking could. It was Stevenage and Woking anyway. And Stevenage is a striker called Barry Hales, who went on to play for Bristol Rovers, I think Plymouth as well.
Yeah, Fulham.
Fulham, of course. So there was there was something there where they had a chairman called Victor Green who got caught up in all this inappropriateness. You can read it in the history books. I'm not making that up. So, so that's why Hugh goes in. But no, Paul Tisdale, very good dresser. Not that I've got any fashion sense whatsoever, but he always looked very dapper. We were discussing off air there about trying to remember him as a Yeovil Town player. I don't remember him that well, but I do remember him being quite a classy, classy footballer. Obviously, someone with a good loyalty to clubs that are loyal to him. He was longest serving manager, wasn't he, alongside Wenger, I think, at the time, Wenger and Ferguson. I never really hated Stevenage that much, but hate them a little bit less now, maybe, because they've got Paul Tisdale as manager. Can't speak with Hugh though.
Yeah. This one from Craig.
How about you? Do you hate him?
No, I don't. I'm not bothered, really.
No real feelings about Stevenage, okay.
No. I mean, we got Kirk Jackson from Stevenage.
Yeah.
He did all right for us. My most prominent memory of us playing Stevenage is the FA Trophy final. And
oh, yeah.
And also yeah. Gary Johnson's first game back in charge was against Stevenage, wasn't it, I think?
Could have been.
I think it was when he returned and Andy Williams scored the winner up against Graham Wesley.
Oh, yeah, Graham Wesley. Now, there's a reason to hate Stevenage, Graham Wesley. Yeah. I'll hate him for that very reason. Yeah.
Another question from Craig McCann, although this one is perhaps more for Ben, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah, we have got an answer.
You might have an answer.
We have got an answer from Ben for this one. Go on.
Okay, so the question is, I played up at Coombe last week on that dodgy, hilly second pitch during the windstorm that made it almost unplayable. Is it the worst and most windiest place you have ever played football? And where is the worst place you have played football/sport?
Okay. Well, obviously, this is because Ben frequently refers to his goal-scoring heroics with Coombe St. Nicholas. So he wrote here, ha-ha, that's him laughing. There are a few horrid places on the Perry Street circuit, including Zembard Lane at Chard, which is hardly a flat service. The delightfully named Dogshit Park in Chard Town has its own obvious challenges. I scored the vast majority of my goals on the second pitch at Coombe, the Theatre of Dreams. So I think he hasn't really answered the question about the worst play, but he obviously has a, you know, he loves the second pitch at Coombe St. Nicholas, I think.
Sounds
where's
like
the worst place you've ever played football in?
So I used to, locally, I used to hate it when we were kids and we played Sandhurst, and we used to play at Sandhurst Park, and it was like the biggest, it felt like the biggest slope ever. When I was at uni,
Sandhurst Park?
Yeah, it was, I think it
where
was.
Where is
it? It's in Yeovil.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it might not have been called Sandhurst Park, but they were called Sandhurst, and they played at this slopey pitch. And when I was at uni, we used to play in Camborne. You used to have to park your car on this like lane, go and get changed in a cricket clubhouse, and then you'd walk through what felt like a really rough like council estate. And then played on a muddy slope, and they were horrible.
Sounds worth the effort, then.
They were all, we were all in, you know, innocent students, and they were all like local Camborne miners or whatever, who like would just kick you, beat you up.
Like Camborne miners, as in going down the pit, or miners, as in they were very young.
Going down the pit. Probably none of them went down the pits, but they were just rough. And it was a horrible place to play football. But
there you go, Craig. Yeah. Ian's answer is Camborne. Yeah.
Have you got any? What's the worst place?
My footballing career was very non-existent. So
I haven't had a career in football, Dave.
Well,
I never got. I only had to pay to play. rather than the other way around.
I don't think I had enough money for anyone to let me play from. So, yeah. Any other questions?
Well, we've got a question and a picture from Glover's girl, Debs Curtis, who's got the...
I have seen this. Oh, this is turns my stomach just looking at this picture.
If you go, come on, I will retweet it. The question is there too many Palmer Violet products? And she's shared a picture of a Palmer Violet gin liqueur.
I know. Made by Manchester Drinks. I'm ashamed to be living in the northwest of England where this kind of nonsense comes out. But yes, there are too many Palmer Violet products. One is too many. Palmer Violets themselves are too many. And Ben's not here to stand up for his beloved Palmer Violets. So I will go full Nelson on them.
And I don't particularly care. And we have got one from Ian Hammett, which is a little bit of a takeovery question.
Oh, we like a takeovery question.
What do you guys think will happen to the club if the potential takeover from the rumoured groups or anyone else does not happen this season?
We did kind of answer that before, didn't we? We'll all be shaking buckets.
Yeah, we have, we've sort of touched on it, haven't we? But...
Yeah.
I honestly don't know what will happen.
No.
I think the cup run is important. I think for me it's not so much. I don't see the cup run as people. I think people were seeing it as if once we're out, they'll go.
Yeah.
But I'm not necessarily sure that's how I'm looking at the cup run. I think the cup run is more of a that's going to pay the bills.
Yeah.
Rather than that's being taken or that's not going back into the club, I think it is absolutely pivotal. So, that's why I think it's so important we get through and draw. It'd be good to have a big club away, wouldn't it? Really, rather than a big club at home.
Yeah, yeah. If you got a Arsenal at the Emirates or Man United or someone like that, you get half the gate of all of those. That would be, even if they get much smaller gate, it would be quite a windfall, wouldn't it? I'd have thought. But but no, I'd agree with you. And I think just repeat the same thing that we've repeated. There's, somebody say something, someone do something, someone tell us what is going on to all these different people that we keep hearing about that are involved in all these people that have the best interest of the club at heart and only want what's best for Yeovil Town. Do something.
Yeah. And if you read it on Facebook or on social media, the chances are it's probably not based in reality. So don't believe all the rumours that you hear or all the stuff that comes out, just because even those on the front line, or not necessarily on the front line, but those with a little bit of knowledge don't know the details. So
a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing, isn't it?
It is.
That's why I've been danger to myself all my life.
Well, I think that's all the questions.
There was another one.
Was there?
There's one here from Northern Wurzel.
I've missed that one.
Yeah. And I can ask this and answer it. Is Wrexham's catering the worst in the National League for a club that is going up to the league, apparently? Well, that's what they sang on Tuesday evening. You see, it wasn't just me who heard that. It was Northern Wurzel. Well, that could be me, couldn't it? But it's not. I promise you, that's not me. But is it the worst? They're this tiny little... hatch in the away end, and by the time I got there, they'd run out of hot food, and the hot food that they had looked like sausage rolls and possibly pasties that had been cooked somewhere near the face of the sun. I think they were that burnt and crispy. So I would say they're probably up there, although I did have a Yorkie and a Bovril. Tried the Bovril on the promise that it was going to be nice.
Do you want to talk about the Bovril on the record, or would you rather not?
Elliot asked me to rate it, and as it is the first Bovril I've ever had, it was both the best and the worst Bovril I've ever had. Put it this way, I'm not rushing out to get another one. Let's put it that way.
There you go. That was almost Barrett-esque fencing that.
Thin, salty gravy.
There we go.
Okay. Well, finish the podcast in the only way we know how?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hello and welcome back to the quiz. As we all have heard in recent weeks, young Ed Turnbull is doing rather well at this quiz. So we've brought in a bit of high-powered competition for him. So Ed, first of all, welcome back to the Glover's Cast quiz.
Thank you. Good evening.
Fourth time in a row, I understand. Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
Blimey. But to take on Ed in tonight's quiz, you might have heard of him because of his love of a lasagna, or you might have heard of him for making a terrible job of getting his way home after the overtime away day. Coming to us live from the Isle of Wight, it is Mr. Michael Cleverly.
Hey, hello.
Welcome, Mike. So can we just establish to start with the reason you're on the Isle of Wight wasn't you didn't take a wrong turn, get a wrong train. Can you get trains to the Isle of Wight? I don't think you can you?
I think you can, actually. There are train stations here in the Isle of Wight.
Oh, are there?
Train stations, yeah.
Do they go to the mainland, though?
I haven't figured that one out yet. I mean, maybe after Saturday, who knows?
They might do. Right. Okay. Well, with no further ado, let's get on with the quiz. We have another theme. I've managed to make another one up. So tonight's theme is forward flops. These are all strikers who play for Yeovil between 2015 and the present day. Didn't play for all that time, obviously. But collectively, they have managed just 6 goals in green and white. So they're obviously, you know, talking some high-powered front men here. Okay. So, Michael, you know the rules, yes? Yeovil Town, who am I, et cetera,
yeah,
et cetera?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
He knows the rules. Okay. Right, so I'm going to read this out. If you get a wrong answer, I will hold you off until the end of the next paragraph, and then I will bring you back in. But if you get a right answer, then you win the point. It's a best of 3. I do have a tiebreaker. I don't know why I've written that, but I do have a tiebreaker just in case. Okay, so here's the first one. I was born in Bedford in April 1992 and joined Coventry City as a youngster, making a professional debut for them in the League Cup defeat at Hartlepool in August 2009. My league debut came 3 days later and I impressed enough to be awarded a 2-year deal at the end of the 2009-10 campaign. The following year, I made a loan move to Cheltenham and got my first professional goals within just 2 minutes of coming on in a 6-4 defeat at Rotherham. I ended up playing 22 times at Wadden Road before being loaned back, before returning to Coventry and then being loaned back out to Cambridge United. My form on loan saw me given another 2-year deal, but I made just 3 appearances for Coventry in the 2011-12 season. My only football in 2012-13 came in a loan spell at Tamworth. I was released in the summer and I went on trial at Peterborough United, where I impressed enough to get a deal. I actually turned down an offer from Tranmere that same summer because they wouldn't give me any accommodation. All they wanted to do was pay my wages. Ironically, my only goals for Posh came with a brace and a 5-0 win over Tranmere in the FA Cup and another in a 4-2 defeat at my old club Coventry on Boxing Day 2013. But in January 2014, I was a make-weight in a deal which took Connor Washington to Peterborough and sent me to Newport County. And I made 14 appearances from that season without finding the net. I got a goal in my first game of the 14-15 season, a consolation in a 3-1 League Cup defeat at Reading, but managed just 2 others that season and was eventually released in the summer. And it was in the summer 2015 that I arrived at Huish Park, making my debut alongside Mark Beck in a 3-2 opening day defeat at Exeter City under Paul Sturrock. Probably my most notable appearance of my early months at Yeovil saw me red carded for a wild challenge in a 4-2 defeat at home to Morecambe. It's going on this one. I had to wait until my 15th appearance to get my first goal. The second in a 2-2 draw at home to Stevenage in November 2015. My other goals came in a last-minute consolation in a 3-2 Football League Trophy defeat at Oxford, and then a 90th-minute equaliser in an FA Cup tie against Carlisle United, played at Blackfield's Bloomfield Road. That earned the Glovers a replay back at Huish Park, where they ultimately went on to lose.
Sean Jeffers?
Sean Jeffers is the right answer. Yes. Blimey, that one did go on for a while. These terrible centre forwards have obviously not stuck in either of your minds very well, have they? But okay. So yes, you're right. The answer is Sean Jeffers. Okay, so 1-0 to Ed. Number two. I was born in Zurich, Switzerland, in January 1994.
Goldo Mateo.
Goldo Mateo is the right answer. Oh, God, he's straight in there with Switzerland.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, Ed. I don't... Blimey. Mike, I had high hopes for you, I have to say.
I know I had no chance, really. I mean, I've heard some of the games for the George Jeffers one. I remember being at the games, but I actually couldn't remember...
It's all a blur to you. Well, do you want the third one just to see if you can salvage some pride?
Yeah, hit me with it. I'm ready.
Okay. I was born in Birmingham in October 1984, and having joined Derby County's youth team as a 17-year-old, I made my debut in a 1-0 win at Ipswich Town in September 2002. I was a regular in the Derby side, playing 30 times, despite only scoring 3 goals, and having started 3 first-team matches of the 2003-04 season, I suffered a long-term knee injury, which led to me losing my place. However, I was awarded a two-year contract by the club, but it took me until December 2003 before I was back involved with Marcus Tutgai and Lee Bradbury, the preferred from pairing for Derby at the time. There were opportunities for me to move to both Russia and the Ukraine, but I stayed to fight for my place at Derby and even had a spell at Sheffield United. At the start of the 04-05 season, I joined MK Dons for a reported £150,000, scoring on my debut in a 1-1 draw with Barnsley, and finished the season with 18 goals in 48 appearances, earning a new contract. The following year, I managed 18 goals again, including an equaliser against Yeovil to cancel out a Terry Skiverton goal at Stadium MK. My form that season earned me a call-up to England's under-21s, coming on as a substitute against Norway in a 3-1 win at the Majeski Stadium Reading in February 2006. But my best goal-scoring form came in 2006-07, with 24 goals in 41 appearances for the franchise, as we made it to the League Two playoff semi-finals. I did manage to get sent off in 2 consecutive matches, with a straight red in one and 2 bookings in my follow-up game. Having been named in the PFA Team of the Year for League Two, I was linked with a move away and handed in a transfer request, leading to a £1.1 million move to Charlton Athletic in August 2007. But the move to the Championship did not go as hoped, scoring just 1 in 25 appearances, and I was loaned out to Championship rivals Colchester for an equally anonymous chapter in my career. The following season...
Leroy Leiter.
It's not Leroy Leiter, but that's not a bad guess. Michael, you have an extra paragraph here. I can sense by your face that you're close to this one. So, an equally anonymous chapter in my career. The following season was not much better. My only goals come in on loan at Millwall, where I got 2 and 8 appearances. With Charlton relegated to League Two for the 2009-10 season, I did manage to make a small mark with 3 goals before oddly returning to the Championship with Peterborough United on loan. Ed, you're back in now. Following my release by Charlton, I had to drop a further division, but found my scoring touch again, this time at Barnet, with 14 goals in 30 league appearances, and topped that with 22 in 53 appearances the following season before moving to Portsmouth. Having scored on my debut in a South Coast derby against Bournemouth, my form was not horrendous, with 11 goals
in 20.
It's not Akpak Pro, but again, not a bad shout that. Not horrendous, with 11 goals in 27 appearances, but left by mutual consent in December 2012, following a difference of opinion with manager Guy Whittingham. I made an ultimately unsuccessful return to MK before scoring in a 4-game loan spell, before scoring once in a 4-game spell at Northampton Town, and then following a prolific season at Crawley, where I got 21 goals in 44 appearances, I joined Notts County, where I was at best average. Ed, you're back in now. Having been released by Notts in August 2016, I was brought to Huish Park and made my first appearance in a 4-1 defeat at Doncaster Rovers, replacing Tom Eaves as a second-half substitute. I got my third in a 4-3 win over one of my many old clubs, Portsmouth, in the Football League Trophy in my next appearance, but that would be my first and only goal in green and white. In November, I was released from my contract with Darren Wade after making just two starts, which Darren Wade described as fair play to me. And I ended up at Wrexham in the National League scoring once in 15 appearances. I announced my retirement from professional football in the summer of 2007 and took up a role as a salesman at MK Dons, where I was the club's all-time top goal scorer. I did come out of retirement for a spell in 2018 to play for Southern League Kempston Rovers, finishing with 15 goals in 36 appearances before injury forced me to retire for good in January 2020. Who am I?
It's Andy Williams, but that wasn't him.
It's not Andy Williams. Go on, Ed. You got one go.
It's not Leon Bessler. No, I just have no idea at all.
Not Leon Bessler. Oh, the answer is Isaiah McLeod.
Jeez.
Oh.
Well, probably the worst. In fact, definitely the worst of the three. He got one goal. Goldon Mateo, two. And Sean Jeffers, three. But here's the tiebreaker for you. Isaiah McLeod scored more career goals than either Jeffers or Omoteo. How many goals do you think he scored? Nearest one wins. You can get one back here, Clegg.
Should have been listening to what you were saying and adding them up.
You should have been. But I'll give you a clue. He scored quite a few. Over 100, I'll give you that.
Oh, 101.
101? Ed?
Well, I could be an idiot and go 102, but I won't. I'll go for, you said quite a few, 152.
152. You're very close, Ed. 162 it was that Isaiah McLeod got, most of which for MK Dons, but we'll...
He went for 1.1 million, you said.
1.1 million from MK Dons to Charlton, yeah. And he was absolutely pants for us, so I don't blame either of you for not remembering him at all. And if anyone else was listening to this and they don't remember him, I don't blame you either. Okay, well, Michael, it was a pleasure to see you once again. And are you likely to be at Hewish Park against, the Cleverley Derby, El Cleverley Co?
I'm actually fully decided yet. I mean, it's either going on a supporters coach to Somerset for that one or watching in a pub in Stevenage. So I've got to try and work out which is more safer. And then, go from there. But okay. I reckon I might be.
Okay, well, either of them sound unpalatable options, but we wish you all the very best. So, gentlemen, thank you once again. Ed, we'll see you next week. Cleverly, we will see you soon.
In a bit. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Thank you.
And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
There's Lindegaard making Forrest back pedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris. He's found him via the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil.
Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Maddon, after just 6 minutes, gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott. Goal!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.